When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to The Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners, macabre murders and captivating crimes from across the centuries and creating curious cocktails inspired by the Dells that we dell. And it's episode 183.
183. Speeding through them.
And you're back, Nick.
I am. I'm here and I'm alive.
You're alive. Or either that or Emma has perfected her impression of you.
I'm not Emma. No, absolutely.
Do you want to do an impression of Emma, seeing as you have not shut up about her impression of you?
What do you mean I have not shut up? I've mentioned it once.
You've mentioned it twice.
Okay, so that's not shut up about
there's
it.
There's more I've than you would normally do.
I've said it twice.
Yes, but you said it at a funeral, you know, in the middle of a meeting.
with a loud hailer. I mean,
It's like, are there any notes on last week's episode? What do you think of the format? Yeah, so Emma has thoughts about me, apparently.
Yeah. Apparently that's all I am.
But we missed you. We missed you terribly. And thank you to everyone who sent lovely messages to
Indeed.
Nick and expressed their missing of him, but also was very supportive of our little extra weird episode with Emma last week, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm glad you enjoy yourself.
How are you, Nick?
Yes, I am recovered. I am recovered and now full of paint.
Full of paint.
Full of paint. Just everywhere is just like paint. It's like, right. I've scrubbed and there's still paint. I feel like in a sort of Lady Macbeth sort of way. It's like...
Out damn dark blue.
Exactly. So it's much like that.
Not the one with the drama or anything.
No. Don't know what you mean.
You're deeply immersed in the great flatting. I'm going to just call it that. Flattening. Flattening. Flattening sounds worse.
This is true.
It does look sensational.
It's getting there.
So I think we'll try and do some videos over there soon to show people the beauty of what it is.
Well, when this comes out, I'll have 2 days before all the furniture arrives. That is my world at the moment, is painting and masking things and then going, should I got paint on the carpet?
Have you got any paint on the carpet yet?
A little bit.
Nick!
A little bit. But I've managed to scrub it out, so I think it's fine.
Oh, do you want to use my spot cleaner?
Maybe. I'll see what it looks like.
I've got like a portable spot cleaner, carpet cleaner. Guys, this is fascinating
stuff.
Really
exciting.
Oh, no, it is really exciting. It really cleans everything up.
So, I've got all the skirting board done, not a drop, paint in the door.
I'm just so, so glad it wasn't me. Because just the fear. It's a genuine fear that I was like, I'm going to drop paint on it, and then Nick will just use that against me for the rest of my life.
Oh, gotcha.
But now
absolutely.
You've done it. Ah, ha, ha, ha.
Mm. Yeah, but I don't think it's fine.
You do it, it's fine.
It's fine.
Oh, it's fine. Paint gets everywhere.
It's all planned, I meant to do it.
If I do it, then you go into a darkened room and just go, I can't see you for
yes,
a few
just
months.
Just leave now. Just leave, okay?
Good.
It's better for both of us. Just leave.
Any poisonings this week?
A bit too busy.
Too busy.
Too much painting, too much cleaning, too much scrubbing.
Mm.
Yeah, so no time for any of that shenanigans. I'm looking forward to being a bit more relaxed and a bit more to be able to plan out the poisonings. A bit more. So I've got in there, oh, I've got a nice place to sit in my comfy chair and make a proper list.
Yeah.
Of over the past few months, there are people who have fucked me off.
You put your quill in your paper and
exactly,
parchment into storage.
So, exactly. All my list-making apparatus are in storage. So next week I get it all back and then the lists can commence.
I think we're all looking forward
to that. My test tubes are in storage and everything. So.
You said your testicles are in storage there.
No, no, like... I keep those with me.
For emergencies.
I keep those close for emergency use only.
In case company comes around. Always have a testicle or two upon your person.
Just in case. Just in, you never know.
I'm so excited for this. Well, speaking of always having your testicles upon you and painting them, you know, making them shiny for Christmas, I think it is time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
Yes. Well done, Ashley Hart and your testicles. Or not. So thank you for you.
To Christy Pfeiffer. I hope that's right.
Morgan McGann.
To D with Tiffany.
Deal with Tiffany, like that. Amelia.
Francis the Noble.
Francis the Noble, that's a good one. Atomic Dog Mum. Okay. There's a lot going on there.
I'm worried for the dog in this scenario. May Mama.
And lastly, to KK.
Ooh, not the third K, very important.
No, no, just two K, K-A-Y, K.
Oh, I like it. Yeah. KK.
Cunning.
Oh, yeah, that sounds like a villain in a cool novel. Something like Will Selford-White or something. You know?
It's very good. But yes, many, many new patrons this week. So thank you very much, darlings.
Thank you, you beautiful, beautiful Patreon subscribers. We had fun on Patreon this week. Mm. Yes, it was your story.
It was. It? Yes, there was a person and a river.
Oh, there was a person and a river.
There was a person and a river and a sailor. Many sailors.
Well, possibly the greatest serial killer possibly of the last 100 years.
Yes.
If any of the stories about it is to be believed.
If any of the hyperbole is to be believed, or maybe not.
And also we had our latest episode of The Case Files of PC Morris, which is the monthly extra episode that we do for our cyanide connoisseurs. We have a whole big backlog of lovely packs for the cyanide connoisseurs. They are all going to you. They shall be winging their way to you. If you want to know what the hell we're talking about, please consider joining us on Patreon at patreon.com/thepoisonerscabinet, where you get extra episodes every single week, as well as lots of bonus content and lovely, frivolous, juicy, delicious things.
Frivolous, juicy, delicious things.
Exactly. Yeah.
I want some of those.
Oh, yeah.
Do I get them?
Well, maybe we should do. Well, we'll do more house stuff on there and maybe do some Christmas baking.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Maybe make a really long, drawn out recipe for Christmas for no reason.
Right, okay.
A 6-hour goose. Yes. That will taste bad.
This is my ham that I'm going to boil for 3 days. You will watch it, all of it.
Keep an eye on it.
It's live.
It's quite soothing, I'll bet you. You know, a watched ham. Mm.
A watched ham never boils.
Oh, that's right.
As the famous saying goes.
Someone was doing that. A watched ham, no, it just did. Oh, right. Well, Nick, are you ready?
Not really.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison?
Mm.
Or we could drink poison and talk about cocktails.
Oh, we could. So many options.
So much delight.
So many things we can do. So many possibilities in the world.
So much to fill up our diaries with. Should we go with the first one?
Yeah, okay,
we'll go with the first one.
It seems repetitive and obvious, though.
If it ain't broke, don't fix
it. Well,
this
is very true. Mm. This is very true.
Drinking. One day the poison.
One day the poison.
And then questions will be asked.
But not today.
Let's go with the first one. Hooray, hooray, hooray. It is my story again this week.
For the 12th week running.
For the 12th week running. And we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell. And it will flavour our cocktail of the week. My story, so my pick. And this week's secret ingredient is a scree.
Now, when you messaged me with that, you said the scream.
I might have done that.
And then when I saw it on the Instagram, it was like a scream. So I'm
a scream.
A scream.
The scream. The our scream. A... We scream together. He, she, it screams.
It screams, yes.
It's a scream.
Just a general screaming. In general.
I sent you a lot of stuff.
You did. Most of which I went, no, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, I don't. Well, a scream feels like many possibilities there.
Yeah, there's a few.
Yes, and there's a few that are leaping to mind where I go, has he actually done that? That would be interesting.
Have I actually done that?
So with the scream as your ingredient.
Yeah.
What have you come up with?
Well, I'm intrigued, but what was the one you thought, have I actually done that?
Well, there is the old screaming multiple orgasm. There's often like a multiple orgasm or a screaming orgasm or some of that. But that was like a shitty cocktail-ish in the
shitty cocktail-ish.
Well, I guess in the 90s, just so you've got something stupid to say to the barman.
Does he go first to fun of the bartender, the barman, and go, I want a screaming orgasm.
I want a screaming multiple orgasm.
But I want sex on the beach.
Yeah, sex on the beach. And Debbie wants chlamydia. But enough of that. Oh my God. We're mad, we are. And I have no idea what's in them.
Right.
But back to the cocktails.
Yeah.
Wouldn't know. Also, screaming multiple orgasm sounds like a lot of
I don't know where you get the multiple bit from.
Well, I mean, people can have multiple orgasms.
Yeah, but no, in the name of a cocktail.
No, I've heard that. That's what it was called back in the day. Because screaming wasn't enough. Has to be multiple.
Right.
Some guy wrote that and just went, no, put multiple in there because I could totally do that with a girl. If you're screaming the whole time, you wouldn't want there to be multiple. You'd be like, okay,
no,
you've had enough
now. Shush now. It's quiet time.
Could you just do it quietly, but also validate me? But, right. Well, there we go.
So,
that's
so they
said the history of the screaming multiple orgasm in cocktail form.
Sounds delightful. Sounds lovely.
Well, yeah. What have you come up with?
We're having a screaming orgasm.
Oh, my God. I wondered if you would do it. I mean, were there many other
There's a few out there. There's a few sort of scream or sort of general sort of slashery, screamy, shouty sort of things.
Yes.
So then I did think sort of scream, film, slasher.
Yeah, like Ghostface. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No,
all that
I
sort
like
of thing.
It, like
so
it,
I thought
like
I looked
it.
Down that route and I thought, fuck it. That was screaming music. So I don't think I've ever had one.
No.
The drink.
I've no idea what's in
and
it.
And I had no idea what was in it. And I looked at it and I thought, actually, that's all right.
Oh, okay. So
we're going with that.
Yeah, I mean, we all have high hopes.
We always have high hopes.
Screaming orgasm. Does that mean it's a good one?
Well, that's a very good point. It's a very good point. Like, yeah, well, I can only orgasm if someone is screaming, which is less good.
Yeah, I have my weighted blanket and my window open about 3 inches and someone needs to be screaming so I can get off.
That's less ideal. Well,
oh, the jokes now that will come from people are writing them already. Okay, Nick. Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. I think it is high time for us to go into the poisonous captain kitchen and what happens in there happens.
What happens, happens.
But we'll shake up a storm, so we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
So, Nick.
Yeah.
Have we got a screaming orgasm?
Screaming orgasms going on. Screaming
orgasm.
They was.
I just caught my foot in the fridge. Do you know what that's
No.
Black books. You know when Fran does the phone call to your man?
Oh, yes.
And then she's like, Fran, my God, are you all right? No, I just caught my foot in the fridge.
Should I come, Fran? Should I?
So the screaming orgasm.
Yeah.
Never had one of these, no idea what's in it.
No.
But I'll tell you what, it looks, I don't know why I'm saying this, creamy.
Looks creamy.
It looks creamy. Creamy. Okay, so, well, I think there's nothing else for it but
no,
to dive
let's
in.
Just give
I'm
it
sure
a go.
It'll go very well with the fizz that we started off with. Well, it smells of booze.
Mm.
Hey.
Hurrah.
Okay, well, okay. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, okay. I mean,
ooh.
Yeah.
No.
Boozy,
creamy goodness.
Boozy, creamy goodness. Yeah, I mean, that's very nice.
There's a lot going on in there.
Yeah. Oh, I could drink that, quite a lot of that, actually.
And it's also, it is that sort of Christmassy drink. It does have that sort of Christmassy vibe, that sort of, I'm going to decorate the tree with terrible, terrible things after 12 of this.
It does. Okay, well, I'm going to go on a limb. Does it have Baileys in it?
It does have Baileys
Yay!
In it, yeah.
Oh, I'm glad I stocked up on Baileys as well. And I had a Baileys earlier.
There we go.
I was writing and
Baileys
I made a coffee.
All the way.
And I was like, I'm putting Baileys in it. I was in a real mood earlier on. I'm putting Baileys in my coffee. Oh, great. So I am ready for Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. But you're dead right, though. When I'm doing decorations, I never drink Baileys. Any other
time
of the year.
Yep.
Never. Got to get a bottle of Baileys. But yeah, have to pour a Baileys and then decorate the house. Hello,
it's Christmas. Anyway, back to this.
Back to the orgasming.
Yep.
Which you often say during.
I do.
It's like, oh yes, they're orgasming. Let's continue that.
None of this chat.
None of this chat. Where was I? Oh yes, hello. Or is it Bailey's? So what else could be in it? Something? Is there cream in it?
There's cream in there.
Oh, there's cream. Oh, yep. Creamy. Okay.
There's lots.
Oh, is there?
There's quite a lot in there.
Wow, all right.
Hence it being a very large drink.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, it's meant to be served in sort of like a highball with broken ice, like crushed ice.
Oh.
I didn't have a highball and I couldn't be asked to crush ice.
That's fine. I'll neck this back.
Yeah, I'll tumble it with a big old chunk of ice. That'll do just as well. Keep it chilled.
Okay, so is there like a cacao in there or something?
There's not a cacao, no.
Kahlua?
There is a coffee.
Coffee
there
liqueur.
Is a coffee liqueur in there.
Okay, so we've got Baileys, we've got cream, we've got coffee liqueur.
Yep.
Other things.
Three other things.
Three? Rum?
Nope.
Not gin.
No.
Vodka?
There's vodka.
Is there vodka in it? There's
vodka in it.
Bloody hell. Vodka. Okay, two other things.
Yep.
Bitters? Oh. What am I not thinking of?
Many things.
Many. All I'm thinking is chartreuse. No. But what the? So liqueur and the vodka and the whiskey?
No. You will kick yourself because you'll be like, oh, obviously that's the sort of thing that goes in these things. Cocktails.
Is something cream? Is there something creamy?
There's milk. I'll give you that. There's milk in there as well. There's cream.
So there's one more boozy thing. Boozy thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Not cacao. Not coffee. Yeah. With the orange. Orange. Yeah. Shut up. No. I mean, I don't taste any orange in there, but I've decided this is the hill I'll die on. One, love.
No.
No, no, let's not go down that
none
route.
Of that in
no,
there.
There's none of that.
None of that in an orgasm.
Cold, hard liquor. That's what it is.
That's what gets you there.
Oh, no. Amaretto.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Because I taste none of that in there. Oh, yay. Oh, I love amaretto. Put more in it.
There's dry. What's interesting, there is equal parts of everything. All of those ingredients, there is equal parts of all those ingredients.
No to that.
But there are. So, I'm sorry.
It's a really enjoyable drink. Given how much is in there, all I am tasting is Baileys and milk and cream.
Oh,
and
so I get the coffee.
A little bit of the coffee.
I get the coffee in there.
Vodka, and I can tell there's vodka in there because there's just a slightly sharper alcohol behind that. The amaretto is lost.
Yeah, I'm not getting the amaretto at all.
Because I love amaretto, so yeah. I'm gonna put more amaretto in there in a minute.
We had one quite similar recently.
We did.
It was around your birthday time.
It was. Yeah,
I can't remember what it was, but it was a very similar sort of.
You put a flake in it.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
I can't remember what it was. I can't remember
what it was. But that was a Baileys creamy thingamajig.
And it is nice to have those every now and then.
Absolutely, every now and again. Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, no. They're really nice.
Oh, no, they're really nice. They're really nice. And you're like, let's have more. And the thing is, you can't have too many of them.
Oh, you can.
But not in the same way that with some of the hard liquor cocktails.
Fair enough, yes.
Where we go, let's have another and let's have a third. And when you get to the third, you go, I'm drunk and I'm going to die tomorrow.
Yeah.
This will have a very obvious cutoff because it is rich.
Yes,
you'll go, ooh, time to ease off on that. Mixing it with something else with the fizz, yeah, we'll see.
Oh, yeah.
I like that. They're screaming orgasm. That's just disturbing for the people involved.
Well, yes.
And then there's people. Obviously, there's a crowd holding up school cards.
Too much screaming. Not screaming.
Yes.
Well, it was part of that trend, yeah, in the 90s.
Sort of so
the,
you can
just
say
just to come up with stupid names to, yeah, to go to bartenders and look stupid.
But like a slippery nipple.
The slippery nipple, yeah. Long hard screw on against the wall or whatever it's called. There was one like that, and then sex on the beach. And
oh, slow comfortable screwing.
That's the one,
the
yeah. Long hard screw against the wall.
It's going on for a while and it's relentless.
Yeah.
Much like the drink itself. Okay, I think we've all learned something today.
Things that no one needs to know.
Well, with the screaming orgasms firmly in hand, are you ready for a story?
Go on then.
Okay. So this week, I've got a bit mad doing three main episodes in a row, but I was thinking about all sorts of crimes and came up with some really good stories, but then one of our listeners messaged. A big shout out to lovely Paul Roos, lovely listeners from Belgium, sent through a story. And I thought, this is great. Actually, this opens up a whole area that we haven't explored before. So I thought, let's delve into crimes we've not done. So today, we're going to talk about one of the greatest crimes of all. The stealing of art.
Oh.
The old art heist.
The old heist.
The old heist.
But is it on the train?
It's not on a train.
Well, I don't care.
Why?
I only deal with heists on a train.
You only deal with heists on a train. You do the train robberies. I do the art robberies.
Bye. As
we
go.
So today we have a triptych of stories. You see what I did there? Ooh, art reference.
Art thing. That was an art thing, that was.
There will be some references to art things in this. Don't worry, guys. It's not going to be art history because I don't know.
Probably for the best.
The heists and the thefts of some of the most famous paintings of all time. And also one story that I didn't know about, which again was sent in, of the most thieved piece of art ever.
Okay. Love a thievery.
Yeah, you picture art heist. But what do you think of when you picture art heist?
Oh, someone terribly dashing. in the sort of, yeah, absolutely, very suave.
So you're thinking film, TV?
Absolutely, yes. So someone coming down on a rope. Or sort of, only sort of like an entrapment sort of way, lots of lasers.
Wow, okay. So you went straight to entrapment.
Someone
you
know, sort of flinging themselves in a cartwheely sort of way.
Just bypass Thomas Crown Affair and Lupin and all those classy things.
Thomas Crown Affair, love it. Brilliant film.
Yeah, do you love it?
I love it. Yeah.
Original or remake?
I haven't seen the original, I must admit. I've only seen the remake, the Pierce Brosnan one.
Oh yeah, you like Pierce
Brosnan. And I do, and I do like that great deal.
Yeah, yeah. And you like Lupin?
Yes. Yeah, that's like a good one as well.
There's all sorts of like Ocean's 11 as well.
Many art thieveries out there.
So you picture all these suave, sophisticated, you know, highly intricately planned heists. Mm. Turns out that doesn't happen a lot.
No, I think it's more smash and grab, really, isn't it?
It's more running through. Now, today, obviously, you have to put all of your knowledge and your picturing of any time you've been to an art gallery of how high the security is. Because it's phenomenal these days, and all credit to, you know, the people who go, I want to protect these hundreds of millions of pounds worth of things. Yes, maybe I will put up some bulletproof glass.
And mainly, I've learned. Also, you've got to fight your way through just a oil throwing orange paint all over the place.
Well, that's it. Yeah, exactly. Some of them have just now, the amount of attacks on public works of art have been incredible. So we are going to tell a few tales. I always like to tell one I think is one of the greatest crimes of all, is that time I went to Bologna and was booked onto a cool sort of tour of like, look at the hidden messages in Da Vinci's paintings. So Da Vinci Code style thing. And went up into a tower at Basilica in Bologna, beautiful building. Went upstairs and then for about 2.5 hours with some other people were trapped in this unair-conditioned room with a guy with reproductions of paintings. And not even like these are the official prints. This is someone else has drawn these paintings. And him going, but look what Da Vinci was doing. This bush looks like a face. It was like, Da Vinci didn't fucking paint that. This is mental. Some guy going, everything is linked and don't get vaccinated. You know, that sort of thing.
So, sounds great.
Yeah. So that is the greatest art crime of all. But let's start with a really famous one.
Okay.
Most famous painting of all time? What would you say?
Mona Lisa.
It's the Mona Lisa. Yeah. The Mona Lisa. Now, did you know the Mona Lisa was stolen?
I did know that.
Oh, did you?
I did.
Tell me.
I know nothing else, but I know it has been stolen in the past.
She was stolen in 1911. 1911, Da Vinci's masterpiece, that enigmatic smile, that bountiful bosom. After Da Vinci painted it in the 1500s, lived in various king's bedrooms. So Da Vinci is Italian by birth, but obviously worked in France. It ended up in the hands of various French kings, ended up in their bedrooms, ended up in the Palace of Versailles. Emma's favourite crush at the moment, Napoleon, had it in his room for a time being. But then it ended up in the Louvre. And to this day, it remains.
And there it is.
Except for a small, small period of time. Now, this is the shorter of the stories, but it's fun. Now, in 1911, the painting really wasn't as famous as it is today.
No.
It was known to be one of the masterpieces, you know, one of the greatest paintings, and was studied and revered. But really, in terms of popularity and tourists, not so much. People would wander into the Louvre and bring their sketchbooks and their easels and just try and recreate them and study for a while. No one minded. It was fine. So on the 22nd of August in 1911, one amateur artist, a painter, bustled in with his easel and lots of paints, kind of person who's probably really annoying, settles down in front of the Mona Lisa, looks up and she's not there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. Just fine. Paintings move.
Yeah, it's probably out for cleaning or something or other. Yeah.
In this case, photography. Yeah. In this case, there were lots of photographs being taken and the visitor goes, okay, fine, fair enough. You know, I'll ask the guard. I'll wait. Like, how long is it going to be? Because I want to get this done. I really think
I'm
I can
on the schedule here.
Recreate it. Goes up to the guard and says, yeah, how long the photographer's going to be? Going, that's fine. I'll go and check. Comes back like, yeah, the photographers don't have it. Like, right. Where is the Mona Lisa?
Who does have it then?
Who does have it? And while the Mona Lisa isn't as famous at the time, inside it's like...
It's still a big deal.
Isn't it Leonardo da Vinci's Mona Lisa?
Yeah.
Why doesn't anyone have it? No, someone has walked in and just taken it off the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, well, overnight, three men went into the Louvre at the end of Sunday. They all crammed themselves into a supply closet in their various positions and snuggled up for the night, stayed there, frozen, waited till everyone left, then went out and took the Mona Lisa off the wall. Now, she was behind a glass case, but it wasn't the bulletproof glass.
Well, it wouldn't have been in 1911.
Oh, interesting. When was bulletproof glass invented?
That I don't know, but I imagine it was after 1911. I could be entirely wrong. Perhaps it was 1736, before bullets.
Before bullets. Before bullets. Okay.
We've got this glass. But
whoever invented bullets was going,
what do we do with it?
I feel like I want to protect myself at all times. Now I've invented bullets. Interesting side thing. We'll look that up in a bit. But no, it doesn't have bulletproof glass.
And no fancy lasers.
No fancy lasers, unfortunately, no. Yeah. No one is sliding under them
no
with a bum
secret
shot.
Pressure plates and things that shoot arrows at people.
No, it's not Indiana Jones. No, the Boom. Louvre weirdly isn't like
no
that.
Boulders.
No boulders. If you stay there a minute past closing time, just wiped out.
That's how they get the next tour group through.
Sometimes it feels like that. Have you been to the Louvre?
I can't say I have, no.
No, I've not been and would love to, but know from very many people who speak about it. And again, if you see those pictures online of how small
it is.
She's tiny.
That you're about 400 foot away.
Yeah, because people stand there and then have to get up close and then are jostling and like wanting to take selfies and everything like that. And the Mona Lisa is tiny.
Yeah.
She's not a biggie. But so easy for someone after they'd like pile out of the closet, all fall out at once. And then they just take the painting, wait for things to open in the morning, looking like workmen.
Well, exactly. You got a high-vis vest on. You can get away with whatever the fuck you like.
So they didn't have bulletproof cloth, but they had high-vis vests.
Yeah.
Or a
jacket that says workman in French.
So, nothing to see here. Yeah. It was tattooed so, on his
I don't
face.
Think they had little eye mask and swag.
That's
them.
What they were in the closet for, ages. They put on all the different costumes. They're like, we need to agree on one outfit.
Yeah.
Why did you dress as a pirate? Why?
Why have you got onions on a baguette and a bicycle?
Because we're in France. They walk out of the Louvre with the painting. And of course, everyone goes, shit. And then the Louvre is closed. Huge investigation is launched. And the media surrounding the theft is the thing that makes Mona Lisa as famous as it is today. It deserved the fame. Obviously, there's no question about how valid it is. Not like everyone like, hey, let's reassess this masterpiece. It just thrust it into the public limelight because, like, the Mona Lisa had been
stolen.
The
wonder of marketing.
Yeah. Insanely valuable. And people were questioned and blamed. This is the thing I didn't know. The avant-garde writer, Guillier Apollinaire, who was a writer, he was a poet, and he was a modernist. So he was questioned, did you steal the Mona Lisa? And he either implied, or because he knew him, Pablo Picasso was accused.
Nice.
Of stealing the Mona Lisa, going, you've hated the masters,
hated
haven't
it.
You? Oh, you modern men and your ways, haven't you? And they're like, no, we were never near any of this. The painting would be missing for 2 years.
Mm.
2 years until the culprit was discovered. And the culprit was Vincenzo Porreggia, who worked at the Louvre.
Yeah.
He worked there.
Who's going to suspect?
Exactly. He'd worked there. He'd worked on the glass casing the lady was protected by. And he believed that the Mona Lisa belonged in Italy. He was Italian. He felt it needed to be returned to Italy and sold, obviously, for a decent
profit. Yeah.
He set up the theft. He knew exactly when to go in. He knew his accomplices to bring in. Went in overnight, takes out the painting. Everyone clearly goes, no one was watching it. And he keeps the Mona Lisa in his apartment for 2 years.
Nice.
Has this work of art on the wall. But is slowly trying to get the word out in Italy to art dealers. Do you want to buy the Mona Lisa? I will make sure it goes back to Italy. This was his thing. It was like, he needs to go back to Italy.
Also, if he was that bothered, he could have just taken it to Italy and given it to a museum.
He could have. But he wanted...
But he wanted the cash.
He wanted expenses. He is trying to sell it for only $500,000.
I mean... That's still a lot of money in 1911. A lot of money now.
It's not Mona Lisa money, which is priceless.
But if he was doing it for the art and it should be going back to Italy because that's where it's from, then don't put a price point.
You can't put a price point on these things. Finds a buyer in Florence. He goes, okay, fine. Travels there with a trunk with a hidden bottom.
Nice.
That he's got the Mona Lisa in. Like so he goes on a train, Nick.
Goes on a train.
He does
go
on a train. Yay! No one suspects a thing.
No, absolutely. And a trunk with a hidden bottom. Like it. Like it.
Yes, sipping his screaming orgasms all the way. Like, my hidden bottom will fox everyone. He goes to the art dealer, but the art dealer has, of course, informed the police and said...
Well, it'd be a difficult one to advertise you've got, really, isn't it? It's fine. Okay, I'm going to... Yes, I'm a rich crazy man in a castle, and I'm gonna
wow.
I'm gonna have this pose, but I cannot tell anyone ever that I've got this picture.
No.
So there'll be a room that I can go. Oh, look, I've got the Mona Lisa.
Well, that's interesting.
But no one can. You can't tell anyone. You can't go. Come and see.
Come and see the Mona Lisa.
I've got the stolen Mona Lisa.
It's a topic we'll return to, and I'd like your opinion on this. It's worth a discussion. Okay. Maybe midway through about. You know, the black market of where missing paintings have gone to. Has someone done that? You know, has
someone with
a castle going
absolutely.
Like, yeah, I've got a basement and I can trust a lot of people because I can buy and sell you. Yeah. The police are there. The man is arrested. The painting, because it was in Italy at the time, it did go to the Uffizi for about 2 weeks. Huge numbers flocked to see it. And then the folklore around this sort of rises up that this man had tried to return the Mona Lisa
to Italy,
to its rightful home.
It's stolen
by the French, and it should stay here. And he is lauded as a folk hero. The truth is, Da Vinci, he worked with the French kings regularly. He designed their chateaus. He gave them works of art. So it's not quite as bad as the British Museum.
It's not like spoils of war type thing, is it?
No, and stuff will come to. But yeah, the man who stole it, he only got 6 months in prison.
Well, good for him.
The Mona Lisa has, of course, as you've referenced, been attacked over the years. Yeah. Mostly unsuccessfully because it's never been damaged. It's only a tiny...
Well, no, there's so much stuff in front of it.
Yeah, there was a man who threw a rock at the glass before it was bulletproof. You know the history of bulletproof glass.
In depth and deeply.
Mm. Someone threw a rock at it and a tiny shard knocked a pigment. This is the level of detail that people
understand.
Well, that's
the problem. I mean, bulletproof glass, famously, not rockproof.
No, it wasn't bulletproof, but it was just regular thick glass then.
So, bullets bouncing off, rocks go straight through.
Rocks thrown by a man.
So,
that's fine. Yeah. We can stand like the velocity of a gun.
Exactly.
But a man with a rock.
Yeah, just can't do it.
But yeah, again, over the years, the Mona Lisa was attacked. A man came in, attacked it with a razor because he was in love with the Mona Lisa.
Yeah, that's just weird.
Just wanted to have her. And very recently, stop oil threw cake across the glass. But people keep hurling shit at it.
Yeah, they do.
And as I think we've mentioned briefly before as well, occasionally that's very useful for art, more for sculptures. When the man attacked David at the Galleria in Florence, the beautiful statue of David, which is incredible to look at. It's so amazing. But the tiny chip of the toe chipped off. And everyone's like, you bastard. This will really help us work out how old this is.
Yes.
This is amazing.
We can do some tests now.
We've been waiting for people to do this for years. But there you go. That was a quick one about the Mona Lisa.
Like it.
Mona Lisa. La, la, la. But now, Nick, we're going to Ghent.
Okay.
Ghent, Belgium.
For some altarpieces.
We are going to the altarpieces. Ooh, what do you know?
Well, I know it was this big triptych, isn't it? The
altarpiece. It's called a polytich.
Beg your pardon.
It's polyamorous. It loves it.
Isn't the one that was sort of like hidden away from Nazis during the war and things?
Yeah. Lots of shit has happened to this.
I don't know much about it, but I know the Ghent altar thing is incredibly famous.
So the Ghent altarpiece, the most stolen artwork, theoretically, of all time.
Yeah.
And again, this is the thing that our dear listener Paul sent through to us. Also, the art historian Noah Charney has written loads of articles about that and gave such great resources, so shout out there. But yeah, most frequently stolen artwork in history. It's been burgled, it's been burned, it's been taken on 6 different occasions. It's the subject of 13 crimes over its 600-year existence.
Yeah.
But could you describe the Ghent?
I couldn't know.
Do you know what it looks like?
I'm assuming there's one. I don't know. It's obviously religious. I don't know what it depicts. If it's is it stories? It must be like stories from the Gospel or the life of Jesus or something. I don't know what it's of.
good summary. But, do a lecture on that.
But some sort of church-based thing.
Yeah, the altarpiece is based on some church shit.
Yes, some churchy stuff.
So it is. It's massive.
It's
so
huge.
It's a series of panels. There's about 12 different panels on it. It's absolutely huge. And it has been swiped by Napoleon again, disappeared twice in the World Wars. It's either been hidden, it's been attacked. It was coveted by the Nazis.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Inspired movies, and parts of it remain missing to this day.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yes. So, the Ghent altarpiece, also called the Adoration of the Mystic Lamb.
Like it.
Which I think is a good name for a band or an album for a folk rock band.
Yeah, true. Yeah, absolutely. What, Mystic, the Adoration of the Mystic Lamb?
The Adoration of the Mystic Lamb.
Or just Mystic Lamb.
The Mystic Lamb is the Lamb of God. Out of context, honestly, if you weren't religious and you were like, what is the Lamb of God or the Mystic Lamb? And you see bits of it which are incredibly detailed, like, why is everyone worshipping that lamb?
Yes, why is there a lamb?
The lamb represents the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah,
but why? I know it does.
It's innocent.
But this is like
purity and it's
tasty.
Tasty.
Good with mint.
Good, fluffy. Lovely.
Lovely chops.
Lovely chops, as the Spirit wanted. On Easter, we eat lamb.
We eat the Holy Spirit.
You're thinking, yeah, it's great. Okay, so the Adoration of the Mystic Lamb. It was completed in 1432 by the Van Eyck brothers. 18 oak panels in total, showing different scenes from the Bible, as you've said. So this is going to go behind the altar, and it's going to show, yeah, all the key scenes from the Bible. It's going to show the people who commissioned it. And some other, you know, key players.
Absolutely.
The panels, interesting enough, covered in chalk and glue, animal glue specifically.
Nice bit of size.
And then you layer on the oil paint. And then the paintings take shape. So it's like an A to Z of Christianity. Mm-hmm. You've got the Annunciation. You've got Adam and Eve. We'll come to them. John the Baptist. And you've got the Adoration of the Lamb of God. And yet, with the Adoration of the Lamb of God, the scene of it, look it up on the internet because it's incredibly detailed and you have sort of layers and layers of people of like nobles.
I've always thought the lamb's
soldiers.
Got like a halo going on around his head.
It's kind of, I don't know if it's got a halo on it, but it's far away. It's far away in the picture, very small, far away. It's on a big old altar and it's sort of prancing. It's a fancy
one
sheep.
One would prance.
Yeah, but the eyes follow you. The eyes look out, and they're really far away, but someone examining it going, the eyes follow you around the room. But it is now, it continues to be on display at St. Bavo's Cathedral in Ghent, in Belgium. So the brothers who painted it, Hubert and Jan, were from the Netherlands. It was commissioned by the mayor of Ghent and his wife for the cathedral. Hubert died 6 years before the panel was completed, and his brother Jan completed it for its installation in 1432. And it's one of the most important early oil paintings and the transition between Middle Ages into the Renaissance. It has an inscription on one of the panels because people always go back and forth like which brother did what. And it's quite sweet or could be very passive aggressive. Hubert van Eyck. And in Latin, it's written greater than anyone.
Modest.
Then Jan, calling himself second best in the art. Completed it in 1432. So this is inscription naming Hubert as the greater than anyone and Jan second best. So Jan wrote that. Said like, he was the genius and I am only second best. Or I like to think that Hubert wrote that on there just before he died and go, you finish this knowing you'll always be second.
seems harsh.
Probably didn't happen, but yeah. You know, we can dream. Now, the original framing was lost. You'll be very sad about this, Nick, because that had all sorts of moving pieces.
I like a moving piece.
Yeah, and music.
Nice.
It played music and it opened shutters and stuff like that.
I mean, the things from back then, so desperately clever.
So much.
So all that mechanical movement and things like that is incredible how they came up with all that sort of shenanigans back then. It's amazing.
Into the Reformation, into that, like they go, no, we don't need any of that fancy shit. Had trouble over the years, so it was the target of Calvinists in the 1560s. They broke into the cathedral going, we're gonna burn it, we're gonna burn it.
It's all very icony. None of that.
They went, where's it gone? And they went, we don't know, it just went away. Someone else came here earlier and got it. It had been hidden up the bell tower. And it stayed up there for a number of years. And I do like to
good
picture
to
someone
it.
Who is holding the rope going, please make them leave. This is very heavy. So it was suspended from a rope. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, but I don't think by man holding.
No, I don't think that. But I like to picture it. It's just one altar boy like, please help me.
It's just for the next 4 years, it's a continuous stream of rotor of people holding this rope.
Yeah, like, can I go on lunch now? No, I got news for you.
There's a hook just there.
No. Suffer for your answer.
Exactly. You must suffer for the Lamb of God.
The lamb watches. Side note, it was burned at different points, but it was restored. There were some restorations that were really clumsy. And there was a really nice side note about in 1550, there was a restoration that took place and the artist performed it with such care and reverence that, according to accounts, with such love that they kissed that skillful work and art in many places.
Okay.
Don't kiss the art.
Don't kiss the art. I think that's one of the things, is just leave the art alone.
Or just they're fixing, going, I'm so sorry. Boo-boo kiss.
You remember art restoration. Do you remember that woman in Italy?
That's a good sentence.
No, they were in modern times. I think probably about 10 years or so. There was a fresco in a church in Italy somewhere. Of the Jesus.
The Jesus, yeah. Nobody fuck with the Jesus.
But it was quite sort of worse for wear, and it needed work done, but the church couldn't afford to do the work. So a parishioner thought, I'm good at art.
Oh no, please don't
I'm
tell
good
me
at art, sort of, I'll do it. I'm just trying to find a picture of it. I'm going to show you a picture of the what it was. This was the before.
Oh, that is a very Jesus-y picture.
A very Jesus-y thing. Sort of.
Sorry, of like in the torments.
Does it say
when
it was originally painted? End of the 19th century, so not ancient. But then she's like, no, it needs work. This is what it ended up like.
Jesus Christ, why? Oh, why are you showing me that, Nick? What has happened?
So before and after.
Oh my God.
So we'll put this in the episode notes or what
Please
have you.
Please do, yeah.
But yeah, I remember. And it is like monkey Jesus.
It's like a child has drawn over it.
Yeah.
Who would and why and why?
And yeah, she was. I'm just reading this article. It's 2012.
Yeah.
An 80-year-old amateur painter decided to fix it up.
How would the church give it to her though?
Well, no, because it was on the wall. It's on the wall of the church, and she just did it off her own back.
She waited in a closet overnight.
Yeah, because the church is open though, so it's just a fresco on the wall. So she decided one day to, I'm gonna go sort this out. You got me on a tangent of failed restorations.
Brilliant. Please keep them coming during this. We've got the history to go through. Back to the altarpiece. So it's been restored and into 1782. This is great. So Emperor Joseph II visited the cathedral to see this beautiful altar work. And he pretty much screamed at the sight of Adam and Eve because they're naked.
My God.
Nude with the fig leaves. But it's incredibly evocative. The picture of them, it begs for some voiceover work. Like there's people on TikTok who do it and just kind of like do a little script and like do a voiceover for them because they just look so dour and miserable. And Eve is holding a citrus fruit.
Nice.
Not an apple, a small citrus
a small fruit.
And it's been like, hey, do you want to have my citrus fruit? Okay, no, I don't really want to do that. But yeah, the emperor came in and go, remove it, we can't have them naked. And the priest are going, you know, Adam and Eve were definitely naked.
It's discussed many times
in the Bible. No, they all wore gowns and ruffles. We won't have this.
Oh, so that reminds me of another thing. Oh, you got me on going. You've
got
me on the reminding.
Who knew art would set you off?
In the Vatican. They have obviously a huge amount of old sort of Greek and Roman sort of statues and sculptures and things like that. Now, famously, a lot of Greek and Roman statues were done nude. That obviously, eventually, when in this sort of period, people go, naked people, none of that. And I'm sorry, not at all in the Vatican.
No.
Because
you can't
like
have
people,
the temptation.
Exactly, you can't have like statues with willies going around because people will go.
Well, really, not in the Catholic
it's
Church.
It's not ideal at all. So a pope, I can't remember which pope it was, ordered all the willies to be removed.
No.
And then a load of plaster cast fig leaves.
Love it.
Chucked on all these statues.
Shame.
So hack off the genitalia.
Yeah.
Chuck on a load of precast plaster fig leaves on all these statues to stop inciting lust in the Vatican.
Well, I mean, it's the Vatican. There's a lot of your own bishops and priests going around. Have words with them before you start. The art is the thing that's making them attack people.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's the art that was the thing.
They
inspiring.
Keep getting reports of the abuse through. And they go, you know what the problem is? The statues.
The
no,
statues.
I don't want to hear any counter-arguments. Whatsoever.
So, yeah. I think that was like 1600s, 1700s or something like that. So at that sort of point where they're going, oh no,
well,
naked people.
Well, I suppose you couldn't. You have no porn, you know.
So,
you just go to the Vatican
statues.
For a bit, just look at it like, oh my god, pubic hair is a thing. Oh my god, so curly.
No, yeah.
The attention to detail on some of those.
Oh, it's incredible.
Classic. I mean, incredible. The marble artwork of people with veils and stuff like that. But it's the attention to detail to the pubes.
Yeah.
They're so curly. They're so curly and fluffy.
Well, generally they are. So.
I know, and praise to them. Artist was really going to work. 1794. Yes. French Revolution. Anyway, Nick.
I'll shut up now.
No, carry on. 1794, French Revolution. It's like I'm tying everything together.
It is. It's all
there's always a common thread. Our dear friend Napoleon ordered his troops to steal 4 pieces of the panels and bring them to Paris. Mm-hmm, and okay. They will sit in the Louvre. Everything should be in the Louvre. Everything Belgian is French now. That's it. After Waterloo and Boney are like, oh, yep, shove him away.
Off you go.
The panels were returned.
Very kind.
By the king to Belgium, who's very happy with Belgium. You helped me while I was exiled, so I'm now king. So you can have your panels back. Should be the end of it. Now, a priest who worked in the cathedral swiped the wings of the altarpiece. So not actual works of art, but, mm-hmm. Decoration. And in 1816, pawned them.
Nice.
Not sure what for.
More wine.
I am hoping a sandwich.
A sandwich.
A good sandwich.
A selection of Walter Boys. Crisps.
Yeah. Oh, God. With the sawn off genitalia from the Vatican. Right, happened to the penises. I just want those and you can have all this all the time.
I've ordered a box of penises from the Vatican.
These aren't marble. You sick, sick priests.
Your wall is very interesting.
You didn't think about putting the artwork up? No.
Just a wall of 7 penises.
Also, would you like some wine?
Have some wine.
No, I'm fine.
Can I take your coat?
Oh, that's quite handy. The hanging. Also, I'm so frightened. But this pawning of the wings, The rest of the artwork was taken in World War I. It was taken to Germany, so the rest of the artwork could be reunited with the wings, you see.
Right.
Perfectly reasonable.
Oh, so the wings were in Germany at this point?
Yes. They ended up in Germany, and in World War I, the Germans then went, well, we need the rest of the artwork to match with the wings.
We got the wings. Might as well get the rest of it.
Yeah, we have to restore it. I mean, that's just normal.
We have to restore it here.
But it's ours. No. Okay, Treaty of Versailles, return that. It's fine. It should all be fine now. It should all be fine. Let the bloody altarwork lie. No, World War II. World War II. Hitler decides he wants a piece of this.
He likes a bit of art.
He really did. He had a plan to make the greatest museum of all time.
Absolutely, the Führer Museum or whatever.
The Führer Museum,
it's going to be the grandest, massivest museum in the history of the world.
And that's why you have so many works of art stockpiled and hidden away. Goebbels also wanted the altarwork, and there's differing reports between he was working for Hitler to go and find artworks. There was also Goebbels was definitely trying to get stuff for himself.
Oh God, absolutely. And, like, I'm sure his apartment was probably fairly well kitted out.
Oh yeah. Anything that's missing was in Goebbels' apartment.
Yeah.
So it's taken along with, I think it's 7,000 other pieces of artwork that had been pillaged by the Nazis, stored in various castles. This one was stored in the salt mine in Austria, where lots of other works of art were found. But that one was saved by the Monuments Men.
Yes, indeed.
1945, and inspired the film.
Mm.
There is a film out, yes.
There is.
So they found the paintings, returned them to Ghent. I can't go into the whole of the Monuments Men, but yay!
No, good for them.
Good for them.
Good for them. Another thing that was stolen during the war, which I think is fascinating, is the Amber Room.
Okay, don't know.
So in St. Petersburg, in Russia, in the Winter Palace,
right,
there was a room, a ballroom, that was entirely just covered in amber.
Ooh,
and it's
okay.
Just known as the Amber Room. Absolutely exquisitely decked out in these amber panels. And when the Nazis were running in there going, oh, we're going to get all the shiny things, all these panels were taken off the wall and the palace was stripped bare of all these panels. And then they have never been seen since. They were assumed to be, they're in a mine somewhere, in a cave. They've been stashed away somewhere.
Been sold privately.
Well, potentially. But I think something like that would have come out, because this is one of the ultimately famous missing things.
Yeah.
I think the theory is that it's just in a cave somewhere.
You still have treasure hunters who are going around trying to find it.
And I'm going off on things. There was a story about some people in Poland who were treasure hunters, and they had discovered what they think is a buried train.
Oh my God.
In Poland, and it was on a route that they thought, okay, yeah, a lot of artwork and valuables and gold and whatever was being ferried out of Eastern Europe, sort of into Germany. And at the end of the war, apparently, sort of, Germans hid a lot of these transports and things because they thought if no point getting it back to Berlin because the Allies are there now, so they were all hidden away. And there was a story that they these sort of treasure hunters had thought they discovered a buried train and number of cars and things, but then they were stopped from investigating by the Polish government. Said no, you can't go there because we haven't got the right permits, or there was some reason why they couldn't like dig it out and have a look. So it's still sort of like buried there, going, it could be full of treasures.
It's a common theme with art that is missing. Weirdly, you hit a wall.
Yeah, absolutely.
With a lot of people going, no, we can't possibly look there.
We can't possibly figure it out. But yes, it's like, what could be down there?
What could be down there? What could be down there? But the old piece, so the old work, has survived to this point. But it was in 1934, so we're going a tiny bit back. Before the Nazi slap fight of them going, we should have everything.
The Nazi slap fight?
Yes. No, not the war. Right, I'm saying over the art.
That's a slightly trivial way
of putting
it.
I was going to say the Nazi slap fight over the art. No. Wow. People died.
Yeah, exactly.
No. Jesus. For the war. The only successful theft that has still not been solved of this altarpiece. So a group of thieves hid in the cathedral overnight in April of 1934, waited for the doors to be locked. They waited till the coast was clear. They carefully removed the panels containing the just judges and also John the Baptist, a panel containing John the Baptist. Very carefully, so as not to damage the rest of the artwork. It wasn't clumsy. It wasn't frivolous. A note was left in its place, written in French, taken from Germany by the Treaty of Versailles. Next day, people come to the cathedral to see the altarpiece and go, there's a bit missing. And they say something is wrong. So the authorities are called. The commissioner of the Ghent police arrives on the scene to investigate and goes, okay, piece of art has been stolen. Right, well, we will put our best men on this in a bit, though, because there's a much more pressing crime I have to investigate just down the street. A cheese shop has been burgled.
I mean, that is a more pressing crime, I feel.
He left the scene just to go and investigate the cheese shop.
How much cheese was missing?
I don't know. There is very little detail apart from it is written down that he left to go and investigate a cheese shop burglary while he was going, oh my God, it's awful. How will we cope with this art going cheese? Is this Gouda? It's very nice. Yeah, can I have a Beaujolais to help with this?
Where he got his cheese from. And that was his Christmas cheese.
in April.
It was Easter cheese.
Yeah, depending when Easter fell that year. He was just finding excuses on the spot to be where the cheese was. Eventually, the Bishop of Ghent received a ransom note. 1 million francs, Belgian francs, for the return of the just judges. This correspondence starts, and as a gesture of goodwill to say, I'm serious, whoever writes a letter returns the panel with John the Baptist in it. So whoever's writing these letters has the art.
Oh.
Back and forth they go. The bishop and the government get involved, and they go, no, we're not paying 1 million francs. No. We're not doing it. We can't pay it. This continues through the summer, into the autumn. Whoever's writing it evades capture. They cannot track them down. The panel appears to be lost forever. In November, Arsène Gaudetier, again, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, is lying dying in his bed, having had a heart attack during a political rally.
Mm.
Calls his lawyer and says, I know where the mystic lamb is. The lawyer goes, that's right, go into the light. He's like, no, you bastard. I know where the bloody stolen artwork is. Go, and he instructs him to go to his desk in his office, and he says, in a desk drawer, you will find an envelope. And the lawyer follows his instructions, and he goes in, he opens this envelope, and he finds copies of the ransom notes, he says, and a final unsent note. The artwork rests in a place neither I nor nobody else can take it away without rousing the attention of the public.
Ooh.
So it doesn't tell him where the artwork is.
No.
But leaves this clue.
But it's in a public place.
Mm. It's concluded that Arsène had been the thief.
Uh-huh.
He had been the thief. He was hinting at the panel was hidden in plain sight in Ghent. So that's what they thought. But like, if you move it, it will arouse the attention of the public. Is it hidden in the cathedral? Is it somewhere we can all see it? Or is it in the possession of someone really high profile? Many think there was a cover-up going on, that the church was in on the removal of these panels and sort of dress up as a heist, but try and sell it to recoup losses that the cathedral had suffered? Was Arsène trying to sell the paintings? Yeah, yeah, he stole it and just trying to make money for himself. He was not a poor man. He had a lot of money. That panel has never been found, and it is still investigated to this day. There was an officer, there's still an officer assigned to the case, and there was one, a guy called Karel Mortier, who was, through the 80s and 90s, found out all sorts of things. Asked for access to the archives from the cathedral about the painting. They gave him the archives, but the crucial years between 1934 and 1945 were removed.
Yeah.
They were missing. They also, he also found out that the typewriter by Arsène, who apparently wrote the ransom notes, other officers had used it, so they couldn't check it for fingerprints. So there were little bits missing. The cathedral has been searched many, many times, and an x-ray has been done of all of the cathedral to 10 meters deep. No sign.
Okay.
No sign of anything.
Not hidden in a wall or a secret room or anything.
Then. You would hope. Nice fact. 1995, Arsène's skull was illegally excavated by an amateur detective, and then someone used it in a seance to try and ask him where the theft, the panel was.
How did that go?
Not well. They haven't found it. There's also been, this is from the Catholic Leader website, which is actually a really good resource on this, great speculation about why the Nazis had a fascination with it. And there are all sorts of claims that the altarpiece contained a map to lost Catholic treasures.
Oh.
So if you looked at the panel,
then you'd find
the crown of thorns, the Holy Grail, and the spear.
Yeah, no.
No, you don't believe that?
There was a map hidden in that particular panel? No, I don't believe that.
But before we come to the final and most terrifying story,
yes,
I think it's time for a drink.
I think it did us.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Okay, Nick, we have our drinks.
We do.
We have delved into the past.
Yes.
We have told some fun stories of art heists.
Yes.
You've told some interesting facts.
Yes.
Yes, they've been very good.
But apparently I remembered.
But now we must end with the most terrifying theft of all. It is the Scream.
Is it Scream related?
It is the Scream. You were right. I tried to fox you the whole time. Oh, I was thinking, do I use the Scream on the Instagram picture as a secret ingredient? But I was like, no, let's tease people out.
I like it.
And these are modern. Modern.
Yes, indeed.
We
very, very recent.
Well, pretty recently, yeah. The main one, well, oh, bless your heart, Nick, because one of them is like 30 years ago.
Oh, wasn't there one of the 2000s or so?
There was.
Okay,
there
was. So that's, I think that's modern.
Yeah, that's modern. But one is in the 90s.
Yes.
And we have to kind of go, oh, that was yesterday. It's like, a while ago. But still, modern for us, but if you're talking about art heists, I think The Scream is a great story and The Scream is a great painting because so many of us know it. There's a particular reason why so many of us know The Scream, not just because it's lovely.
It's a good picture.
Because it came out of copyright in the 90s. So it was reproduced.
So many posters.
Oh my God, so many posters. Everyone had the posters of The Scream and The Scream's making a spliff.
So many trips to Athena. Which was a shopping canter in the 90s.
I keep saying that to Ben. Every time he picks up a kitten with his shirt off, and I go, oh, you're trying to do an Athena poster.
Athena poster.
And he's too young to know what Athena was. Yeah, but the Athena posters, but you got The Scream. And so it was mass produced and, again, inspired Ghostface.
Absolutely.
And inspired lots of other things as well.
Do you think it's someone screaming or someone hearing a scream?
Well, this is what I was going to ask you. So let me explain The Scream to people who don't know.
People without eyes.
Have you not eyes, people? So The Scream, Skirk in Norwegian. Also known, its name that it was given at its first exhibition in German was A Scream of Nature. So people lean heavily into that. One of the most iconic images, you've got the swirling sky and the river and the ghostly figure appearing to be screaming for some reason, by Edvard Munch.
That's how I've always said it. I could be entirely wrong.
I think it's Munch. Some people say Munch, but it's about Munch. So he had a rough childhood.
Yes.
People write about a lot. He was ill a lot of the time. His mother died. His sister died. His father was a great creative support, but also incredibly religious. Mm-hmm. So death stalked him at every turn. And the judgment that would await after death as well. And one of his sisters was diagnosed with mental illness, was put in an asylum, tragically. The inspiration behind the painting said that he took inspiration after walking by the fjord one evening in January 1892. He was with two friends, and he said that he saw the clouds turn blood red as the sun set. And he described it as blood and tongues above the black-blue fjord. And he said, in his own journal, he wrote, "I sensed a scream passing through nature. It seemed to me that I had heard the scream." It's very powerful. Mm. Others have surmised that this vision may have been complemented by the fact that both a slaughterhouse and a lunatic asylum were right next to where he was standing.
A lot of screaming going on. Yeah.
And indeed, his sister was in an asylum at the time. So the inner turmoil, the pain and everything that was associated with it. I, again, like to think that there was just screaming all around him, just animals being slaughtered and someone screaming the asylum. His friends fell down and slipped and went, help me, and he's just going, yes, I think I should call it The Scream. For God's sake, my leg.
The dear old screaming of the lambs.
Lambs, they were screaming. Others also think it was based on a Peruvian mummy. When you start to delve into some of the...
Some of the theories are mad.
Well, there's a picture of a Peruvian mummy that was an inspiration for Paul Gauguin.
Yeah.
And he used a mummy. A mummy stood for him as a model. He just got a mummy and made it stand for it. Had it there. But the mummy is the same sort of pose. It's fetal. It's like a fetal position. It was first exhibited in 1893. Now, there are four versions of The Scream. Not just one. Mm-hmm. Very important to note. There's two paintings, two pastels. So people kind of go like, well, what does that matter? It just matters in terms of which ones we're talking about. He created in 1893, they needed pastel versions, and then one of the paintings was 1910. They're all by him. Mm-hmm. There's just different versions.
Yes, it's going to develop over time. You'd have a beginning sort of a sketch of an idea, and you would develop your piece, I suppose.
Yeah, the 1893 version exists. The 1910 one he just revisited, and you sort of looked at his early one, he did another version of it, and so they're all, you know, masterpieces. He wrote on one of the paintings, the very faint inscription, "Could only have been painted by a madman." And it's thought that he wrote that after receiving criticism for the work in 1895. So as I said, first exhibited in 1893. You've got that version in the National Gallery of Oslo. Second painted version from 1910, and then you have the two pastel versions. One of the pastel versions is in the Munch Museum. The other was owned by Hugo Simon, who was a really famous Jewish German art collector, completely chased out of Germany by the Nazis. This passed on to different people, was sold in 2012 for how much?
Oh God, hundreds of millions.
$119.9 million to Leon Black. Highest ever sum paid at auction at the time.
Yeah.
Factoid, the most expensive painting of all time in terms of being bought is Da Vinci's Salvator Mundo, which was bought in 2017. How much?
Was that 200 and something?
Up.
300 and something.
Up.
600.
Down. That's stupid money. $450.3 million.
Insane.
Who has that money? People have that money, but who has that money? And also, yeah, no, if I was a billionaire, I'd just do that. I wanted Da Vinci.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would.
Well, we're poor. So in comparison to that, we're poor.
I'm going to buy a KitchenAid.
That you don't use on the side. That's the sign.
Absolutely.
Or a Da Vinci.
Or a Da Vinci.
Or a Da Vinci.
A Da Vinci in the bathroom.
Neck propped up against the KitchenAid. So, yeah. I was going to say to you, what do you think the screen represents now that it, you know, it's obviously versions of it been sold. It is in the museums. It is possibly, many of the art historians have credited as being as iconic as the Mona Lisa.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. What do you think it represents? Do you think it's screaming or hearing
a
scream?
No, I think it is someone hearing a scream.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Discuss.
I think it's someone's... I don't know how to put it into words.
Paint it, Nick. Paint it.
No, I think it is someone hearing. I think it is someone...
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I like that.
It's someone who, yeah, is hearing something utterly dreadful or thinking of something utterly dreadful or imagining something utterly dreadful. Mm. And then, yes, just horrified.
Mm. I think they are screaming.
Mm.
I think it's an anxiety or it's something. The scream of nature, the fact that it's called scream of nature, I didn't know until very recently. It's like, oh, that's interesting. There's two figures in the background, though. Mm-hmm. And I always like the idea of what do they know? That's representative of Edvard when he was standing there and he heard this and his two friends are walking down the path. Like, this figure is left standing screaming. Also, it's a little bit like gossip of like, oh my God, what did I hear? And apparently, I shit you not, Home Alone poster.
Macaulay Culkin.
It's based on
Yeah.
It's based on the scream, which kind of ruins it, really.
Yeah.
But I like it that you hear a scream.
No, I think it is someone hearing something dreadful. Not necessarily something dreadful, but something that they really don't want to hear.
Well, whatever it is, it denotes fear, anxiety, trouble.
Absolutely. Yeah, either
madness.
Way.
Either way.
Either way, it's all those things.
And it could drive a man mad trying to own it, Nick. The first attempt of the theft of the scrim was in 1994, a deliciously audacious attempt. Now, the National Gallery in Oslo was having a bit of a reshuffle because Oslo was hosting the 94 Winter Olympics. And wanted to create a showcase of Norwegian culture. And so they decided they're going to move the scream down to this exhibition to the ground floor. Mm-hmm. Famously, don't put your most expensive works of art on the ground floor. I say famously, I read that today. Because easy
near
to break
front,
in.
Near the front door.
Near the front door by this propped up window and bag of swag. But no, don't do that. But they had. They had moved it downstairs from its second floor position. So everyone's like, it should be like, no, it's fine. There's guards and alarms and cameras, and we'll make sure it's extra safe by putting a small bit of wire across it.
Yeah, bit of wire. Keep a lot of people away.
That's a bugger to move. Opening day of the Olympics rolls around on the 12th of February, 1994. Everyone's fixated. Alarms indeed are ringing in the museum, and the scream has vanished.
Does someone ski through?
Energy, love it. Yes, into
like,
a wall.
Into there's like a toboggan has went past really fast, and they nicked a picture off the wall.
They've smashed through walls and also got some art. Love it. Reviewing the security footage, they see two men place a ladder up to a window, climb up it, fall off.
Nice.
Climb up it again, smash through the window, barrel through. Tackle that pesky wire by just cutting it.
See, but now it looks like some sort of Laurel Hardy sketch.
It's quite fun.
So people are watching going, ha, oh, what jolly japes.
What jolly japes. They get the painting out of there in under a minute.
Yeah.
Under a minute. 50 seconds. That's they're in, get the painting
speedy
out.
Work.
They have time to leave a note, Nick.
Nice. I imagine they may have pre-written the note.
I don't think they were just licking
Do you
the
have
pen.
A pen? I thought of something witty.
I know, this would be really funny. Don't worry, it's for a thing. They left a note that reads, thanks for the poor security.
Well, that's going to sting.
It's going to sting everyone in the museum. Like, what the fuck are you doing? So obviously a huge hunt is launched. Mm. Huge hunt to find the painting. It's embarrassing for the museum. The museum director, a guy, Knut Berg, spoke to the press. His primary concern is the damage of the painting. Oh. The most famous painting, he said, it is impossible to sell. So he's probably thinking, please don't mess it up.
Yeah.
But also, you cannot sell this.
What are you going to do with it?
Yeah. What are you going to do? No, of course you can't. Of course you can't sell it. And we go back to the man in the castle kind of thing. Now, this doesn't happen in this case, but, you know, the man in the castle with his vulva, where probably he's keeping some brides as well and dead bodies, which you're not going to show to people. Come back to that thought. But, no, it's not in the story.
Okay.
But, yeah, someone has got it. How are they going to sell it on the black market? Would you like the scream? We know what that is. We've seen the Athena posters.
It would do great on eBay.
Oh, it would do great on eBay.
It'd be great on eBay.
Yeah, a British boot fair. Those people are feral. They'll take anything, true, and they'll pay high prices.
No, they won't. They'll bargain you down to 50p.
Oh, no, but if it's in demand, all you have to do is linger by a table and go, oh, I quite fancy that. No, I'll pay more than she's paying. So during the heist, they are reaching out to everyone. A contact is made, a lead. They get a lead. It is from an anti-abortion group.
Okay.
So we have the painting. It will be returned if you play an anti-abortion film on Norwegian TV first. And they go, okay.
And that's bold.
It's bold. They say, can we have some proof that you have the painting?
Yeah.
And they go, yeah, we've definitely got it. Can you
definitely
hear it?
Got it.
Yeah, it's that, that's it in the background. But you don't have the painting at all, do you?
Just send a picture of a poster.
They send the wrong one.
Do the classic Mr. Bean thing. What does he do? He sort of egg washes it or something, doesn't he?
Yeah, they could have. They didn't think that through. They were clearly, that's not the scream. And they were like, no, it's making a noise. Oh, my God. Like, they didn't scream like that. Shut up. Mm. There's a famous story as well. I think it's a joke, but it is based on a true story with this couple who go to see The Laughing Cavalier, the painting, and they go, I think the sound's turned down.
Oh, that's upsetting.
Yeah. And this thing, I think they must have the sound turned down. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, that's just angered you.
Oh, no, it's just annoying that there are people that stupid in the world.
So, that claim is false, but the gallery did receive an apparently genuine ransom demand. $1 million equivalent for the return of the painting. And the gallery go, no. Mm-hmm. No, we're good, thanks. We don't need to pay that because they are brought in Scotland Yard, Nick.
Scotland Yard.
And they're going to set up a sting.
Nice.
A sting. Detective Charles Hill poses as an American art dealer. He gets the help of the Getty Museum. He gets word out on the underground he's interested in buying. So back and forth, kind of like, you know, the right people get in touch. He has a handler who was a gangster who works in different places.
Brilliant.
In Amsterdam and across the places. And he makes an offer. Of $250,000. Mm-hmm. I'll give you $250,000. Whoever it is who has the painting is like, fine, whatever.
Yeah.
I can't get it for $1 million. $250,000, that'll set me up. No problem. And they go, okay, fine. We will meet you at midnight in the coldest, darkest corner of the city. And Charles Hill goes, no, you know what? No, that seems a bit weird, honestly. Can I meet you in broad daylight? And they go, yeah, okay, fine.
Yeah, fine.
Yes, let's go to a lovely summer house.
Yes.
They go to a summer house.
Let's do coffee.
They go to a summer house, a lovely cottage in the same area that Edvard Munch painted.
Okay, nice.
Nice touch. He goes, he meets them on the 7th of May. They bring up the painting from the basement, and Hill is a trained, not only a detective, he's memorized
expert
the
in
art.
Yes, absolutely.
So he can identify that it's genuine. And he identifies it by this is really nice detail, the wax splatters on the painting of where Munch would have blown out the candle.
That's very smart.
Isn't that good?
I like that.
Because he knew that there would be wax splatters at this particular bit. And he says, I can see that. They're really fine detail. Yeah, okay.
Like it.
So from that, I'm not sure if it's at the cottage or whether he goes back to the hotel and he takes the painting with him. But of course, they're arrest made.
Yes.
The sting happens. The men are arrested for attempted theft, attempting to sell stolen goods. The director of the National Gallery says the painting was undamaged, save for a microscopic pinprint. And that just shows the level of detail you have to look at.
Oh, absolutely. They're with their microscopes.
Yeah, but they said they handled it with extreme care. It's wonderful to see the painting again. The lead culprit was a man named Paul Enger, who was a former footballer, branched into art heist because he'd previously served time for trying to steal another of that artist's work.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And it was the vampire that he tried to steal.
I don't know that picture.
Yeah, it's quite a nice one.
Oh, I have to have a look. I didn't know that one.
All the men were sentenced to 6 years. 3 out of 4 of them walked free.
Oh, wow.
because the British officers who came over to do the sting operation came over under false names, and that's illegal under Norwegian law. So they had broken the law, so the case fell apart.
So they couldn't... Oh, the wonder of the fine print.
Yeah, but they got the painting back.
Well, they got, that's the thing, isn't it? They got the painting back, absolutely.
They did, but then it was stolen again.
Yeah. You would have thought after that one, more wires would be involved.
Apparently not. Well, no, this one was in the Munch Museum. So not in the gallery. This is in 2004. So this was the 1910 painting. So the redone one, the Munch Museum, 22nd of August. This time, much more bold. Masked gunman just walk in. Ah!
Now, I do remember this one being in the news.
Yes.
This one, absolutely. Yeah, it would be just like people just going in with fucking shotguns.
Yeah, absolutely. Going in just... with magnums, and they go in and everyone's like, okay, just take it.
With
just
ice creams?
I'll get you.
I'll get you.
It's a white one. No, no.
It's got nuts. I'm allergic. Ah.
They take the Scream, and they also take Munch's Madonna from the walls. Security here, pretty relaxed too. All that is, goes, you know what to secure them? We'll just put an extra bit of wire, a cord to attach it to the wall. Someone who was there at the time said, all you need to do is just yank it and it came free. And famously, there is a photo of the criminals running away to their getaway card where someone is outside with their phone in 2004 just goes, what the fuck? And just takes
this
a picture.
Fun.
And there's just guys in balaclavas carrying these works of art to a battered old Volvo. It's an estate car, at least. It's not a hatchback. Just shove the fuckers in there. So yeah, they run off. An investigation, lengthy investigation, was launched, but hopes of getting the painting back dwindled fast. They thought the Scream has been taken.
Yeah, it's gone,
because traces of the frame that it was held in were found with an abandoned car, and they thought they burned it. There was all sorts of rumors they burned it because they know they can't sell it, and they just don't want to get chased. So then they've just set fire to it, which is, you know, horrifying and traumatizing for anyone involved. By June the next year, four suspects were in custody, no painting. A 2 million krona reward had been offered for the return of the paintings. To sweeten the deal, literally, Mars, the sweet company, not the planet, can't stress that enough.
Yeah, okay.
Offered 2 million M&Ms in exchange for information about the painting's return.
Like it.
Why?
I don't remember that bit, but brilliant.
They did. I think the planet should have offered something too, but yeah. No one took up the offer. Though some people said, but then information was shared later. Ooh. Maybe that was the thing that actually turned people. Three men were convicted of planning or committing the robbery. There was no public information about the painting's whereabouts. Two of the men who were convicted were ordered to pay 750 million krona in compensation, the value of the painting. So it's a gesture.
Yeah,
just because they don't have that on them. But then in August 2006, the police announced they'd found the paintings. Mm. But they gave no other information.
It's rocked up.
Didn't say where they got it from. Yeah. Didn't say how they'd found it out. Much less damage than they thought. Tiny bit of water damage on the Scream, little bottom corner. The Madonna, she'd been slashed a bit and like poked holes in her arms and stuff like that. But all could be fixed and restored. So they showed the damaged paintings for a bit, and then they took them and they restored them, and now they're under about 7 foot of glass. They're flat. You don't see them on the walls. Yeah. You see them under boxes and a box and a box and a box.
people
with just shotguns.
Guns.
Ish. And they go, well, what happens, happens. But yeah, they've been back on display. So people also believe that the Scream is cursed.
Do they indeed?
People feel that when they see it, they have very visceral reactions, that arguments start.
Well, it's an emotional piece.
It is. People genuinely have emotional reactions. Mm. And there is a story of an employee who was moving the painting in the National Gallery in Oslo. He dropped the piece. Piece was fine. Not a problem. Since that moment, experienced crippling headaches, terrible, terrible feelings, anxiety, seizures. He ended up taking his own life.
Right, because the painting was annoyed with him.
Apparently so. People have attributed to that, and that is you know, sad. Whatever happened to that person is awful.
Yeah, absolutely, very much so.
But people say when they see the Scream up close, they have a very visceral reaction. Now, is that art?
Well, that's the
or
point
is that the ghost of the Scream?
No, and that's the point of art, surely, is to have a visceral reaction. If you have no reaction to a piece of art, then what the fuck's the point of a piece of art?
You should have a reaction.
You should have a reaction.
Yes.
Even if it's, I hate, this is fucking awful. At least is it a reaction to something?
Well, we shall discuss this. But that is the story. Those are my art heist stories.
I like it. That's grand.
There you go. Lots of fun stories. Art heists are great.
That's grand.
Yay. But art, yes, visceral reaction. Yeah. I think you should. If you really hate it, then it's done something right.
Well,
I guess.
I think that's just as valid as a reaction as to absolutely loving something, because it's elicited an emotional response, and that's what you want.
So before we come back to the cases, your thoughts are favorite type or stuff that really you hate? Can you summarize that? Have you thought about? I mean, I'll give you an example that when I've been to different galleries around the world, I'm more of a classicist, I guess. Modern art, certain modern art, I really like. I hate minimalism. I can't stand minimalism. Because I can't say it. Also, when I've been in the... I went to the MoMA.
Yeah.
I've been a couple of times in New York. Wonderful, wonderful gallery. The minimalist bit. Walked in with like, I am cold. I am bone dry, I tell you.
But it's a reaction.
It's a reaction,
It's a reaction.
Because
so,
someone did something and they tried.
Someone did something. And they did something that other people absolutely love.
Yeah.
And amazing. You don't? Absolutely fine.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, but it has a reaction. You feel something from it, even if it is annoyance or frustration or
murder.
Anger or something like that. But it elicits a feeling.
Yeah.
Which is what art, well, any art,
being
it a picture, sculpture,
theatre,
film, whatever. It should elicit an emotional reaction.
It should start a discussion
absolutely.
As well.
If you see a bit of art, which is like, that's bad art, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think so. And it doesn't mean that we're right.
No, absolutely
it doesn't
not.
Mean that we're right. You can have a passive reaction to anything. So with the art heist in the world, do you think there are, because you mentioned it earlier, people in a castle?
Oh, I have no doubt.
Several people in one castle.
No, I have absolutely no doubt that there are people... Because the black market for art is huge. So there are pieces that are stolen or looted from various places and things that end up in private hands. And I have no doubt there are very rich people who have got rooms in an apartment in New York or London or Dubai or wherever that... only they go into because it's got some illicit artwork or something on the wall type thing. And it reminds me of that scene at the end of the Thomas Crown Affair where he's actually, he presses a button and it goes up and he's got the piece of art that he stole like on the wall. But only he knows it's there. And it's for his sort of personal enjoyment type thing.
This is why I think we would make great art heist thieves. Not from the execution, like... Definitely
that
not
would not
that.
Go well because there'd be four Negronis beforehand and we'd fall over.
You'd be shoving me in there. It was all her.
Yeah, it's all her. I know.
I do think it would work for us, weirdly, because we are the sort of people, I think-ish. We're very happy quietly looking at something beautiful just like, if it was you and me.
It's mine.
And like select others. Probably tell Ben and Emma. Like,
things,
no,
you, no, things that it gets out.
That you'd be very strict about that.
Yeah,
it was you and I, like, we set up on, like, just a glass of wine.
No, I don't trust you. No.
This is where it starts, isn't
it?
Then
absolutely.
We'd end up killing each other over the art.
Exactly. You tell your husband, and then it'll get somebody to tell someone else, and then and then the Rosses will be round.
You wouldn't. You liar. You lie like a rug. You would tell someone. You would just get mad at me, and you told five people. By the way, come and look at my massive art.
By the way, it's on Facebook.
You wouldn't tell anyone we know. You would just
selfie
use
with
it.
Me in the picture.
And it's the dark side of it. Is but the scream that sold to a certain person, and I will talk about Jeffrey Epstein because he's dead, knew a lot of people. And that is someone with a lot of money who can buy and sell whatever. There are people in that, I'm sure he had huge amounts of art.
Yeah, it's also, isn't this the place in, where is it? It's in Europe somewhere. It's just a massive warehouse, basically somewhere. It might be in Switzerland. I think, actually.
Oh, you just recreated the end of the Brains
of
Lost Art.
But literally it is. People will store art there.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And it's entirely secure. And there's pieces of art worth hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of million pounds.
Yeah.
That are just in steel cases just in a cupboard, in a warehouse somewhere, because it's an investment. Yeah. It's just, I've got it. Type thing. That annoys me greatly.
I will reference another film. Great film. A Good Year. It's not a great film, but I love it.
I've seen it.
A Good Year. So it's based. So it's based on A Year in Provence. But yes. Ridley Scott directed it. Russell Crowe's in it. It's basically, it's lovely. The guy inherits his uncle's estate in Provence. It's lovely. There's food. There's loveliness. Marion Cotillard's in it, but he is a banker in the city of London, and like his big boss is offering a promotion. And he's showing him a Van Gogh on the wall. And he's saying like, oh no, that's a recreation. The real one's in my vault.
Yeah.
And he says to him, it's so profound, the end of this movie. It's so good. He says to him, how often do you look at it? How often do you look at the real one? And it's, but some people are so happy with just having it. The knowledge that I have this money right there. That's a miser,
In a vault somewhere, locked away.
How could you not want to look at it? I think the guy who stole the Mona Lisa, you'd hope that in his apartment he just sat and looked at it.
Yeah.
And just gone, that's shit.
Try to improve it. Bigger smile, bigger happy face.
Oh, Jesus, if my granny had been alive, she'd be, no, I can fix that. So there you go. There are some of the famous art heists through history. Different crimes that we do. Unfortunately, no one was murdered in that.
No one was murdered,
but we do captivating crimes. Perhaps he was hearing
a murder.
Is that what the
perhaps it was? Perhaps it was a scream of someone being murdered.
I know something that you don't.
Yeah.
Oh, that's profound. Yeah. I like that.
Someone's being murdered. Perhaps the Mona Lisa was a psycho. She was watching someone being murdered. And just that little smirk.
Don't.
Okay. Oh. I'm watching someone being butchered horribly.
Oh, yes. This will entertain me greatly.
Cut off the other arm.
On that note, enjoy your art, wherever you are. Go look at those paintings again and have that image in your head. But what do you think, people? What do you think of our exploration of great art heists through history? There are so many more, but we loved these ones. Tell us what you think. Jump on the comments of this episode, wherever you listen to us. Tell us your thoughts, your theories, your musings. What you would do in an art heist. How would you perform it? What weird, daring deeds and methods would you employ? And also, what art would you steal? If you could steal one piece of art,
that's a good question.
What would you steal? Make sure you weigh in on those comments, Nick.
I like that.
You have any thoughts? Do you need to ruminate on that?
Well, I mean, there's art I like and there's art I want to buy.
Mm.
And there's a piece of art at the moment on sale in Canterbury, which I'm very tempted by.
Don't.
But I really like it.
Which is, what is it?
The Grayson Perry. I fucking love Grayson Perry.
Just get Grayson Perry. Always buy it because you love Grayson Perry. And you keep going back and forth.
I keep on going on about it.
And then you buy other art and it's shit.
Yeah, I do.
I would steal The Starry Night by Van Gogh.
Yeah.
I could look at that.
But then that's the sort of thing that you can't show people.
I don't care.
You can't go.
Would not care. I don't need anyone else to look at that. That is a piece of art that I could look at quietly.
It is an amazing thing.
For just stare at it for hours. I don't need anyone else with me. That's me and my time.
That's the thing when you need, exactly, you need a secret room.
You need
a secret room for that.
Many, many reasons.
Yeah. With a big chair and...
big chair and
that's it. That's all you need.
And a
big
gun.
Chair.
Share your thoughts on what piece of art you would steal if you could. If you haven't already, please consider joining us on Patreon to get more of this stuff.
It's great.
Every single week, as well as bonus content. If you can, please leave us a review on Apple iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. All reviews really, really help us and other podcasts you listen to. And also send us suggestions of what we can do for our Christmas episode coming up.
Getting there damn quick.
It's not long. We would love to know really big stories we haven't covered yet that we can cover for the big day. Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisoner's cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Boy.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.